Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Now, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. So glad to have everybody aboard as I'm joined in studio today by my extremely attractive audio engineer who will be running the bumpers today. Very much appreciate your efforts. Very much. Let's see, the whole world's gone insane this week, and we've got a biker war down in Texas that's been unfolding all day. That's encouraging. I thought it was the bikers who were the new breed of American conservatives, and here they are beating each other with clubs and chains, and it's practically a massacre down there. I don't know all the details, but certainly quite scary. The Cossacks Motorcycle Club, it looks like.
Okay.
No, they're not the mild ones. They're the wild ones. The Cossacks, weren't they the ones who sacked Rome at one point? One of them, anyway. So there we have it. A perfect microcosm of the state of America, where lawlessness rules. And speaking of lawlessness, let's go right to the war file, where Breitbart is reporting that the five senior Taliban commanders who were released from Gitmo in exchange for Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, well, they're set to be freed from their confinement in Qatar, a confinement that sources on the ground have described as luxurious. So they've been living in the lap of luxury there in Qatar, practically as heroes, and mighty warriors of Allah, respected, revered there in Qatar, and they're going to be set free. These are five hardcore terrorists, according to Breitbart. They were classified as some of the most dangerous Taliban commanders at Guantanamo Bay, and Barry Ho, in a lawless act, released them in exchange for, Bergdahl, the deserter. And intelligence sources say that there is little doubt that these five hardcore terrorists will return to the battlefield in Afghanistan. And then they go on to describe how Bo Bergdahl deserted. But we all know the story of Bo Bergdahl, the deserter, and all that. So, but there you have it. Just as, well, anyone with half a brain predicted that these terrorists released by our criminal president, our traitorous president, in my opinion, my humble opinion, he's a traitor. And he has now given the Taliban back five of their top guys. And what did we get? One pasty-faced deserter. That's par for the course in the Ho administration. Yes, Barry Ho. Now, let's talk a little bit more about the war file, because there are other factors besides the fact that America has a retreating, apologizing, traitorous president that are fueling the unrest in the Middle East. Now, we know that the main source of the fuel for the fire in the Middle East is the living God and his relationship with Israel and his love for that whole part of the world. That's the main thing that fuels the constant, never-ending war between people who are basically cousins and should figure out how to live with one another. But I've got a report from Daniel Pipes. Very interesting. Mr. Pipes is, he bills himself as a Middle East expert. And the reason he's able to do that is because he quite often proves himself to be a Middle East expert. In fact, he does it on a regular basis. And he is reporting this past week that a ranking Iranian political figure recently warned that past mistakes leave Iran with water supplies so insufficient that up to 70% or 55 million Iranians may be forced to abandon their native country for parts unknown. That's right, Iran is running out of water. In fact, the entire Middle East is running out of water. And if you think it's bad in Southern California, where celebrities trade barbs and try to shame each other over water usage during a drought, over in the Middle East, well, they just wholesale start massacring one another over water. Pipes reports that Lake Urmia, the Middle East's largest lake, has lost 95% of its water since 1996. Over two-thirds of Iran's cities and towns are on the verge of a water crisis, according to sources that Mr. Pipes has interviewed. And it's not just Iran that has the problem, because it's not just Iran that has terrible pagan socialist governments, socialist dictatorships. They are all over the Middle East, and because bad government means bad policy, that eventually you run out of things like water, which you'd think the government, with all its ineptitude, would be able to at least provide the infrastructure for water, but they can't. In Egypt, rising sea levels threaten the country's coastal cities, and they have contaminated the Nile Delta aquifer, one of the world's largest groundwater reservoirs. The Ethiopian government is building massive dams up the Nile, and they're severely reducing the flow of river water reaching Egypt and Sudan via the Nile River. Down in Gaza, you all remember Gaza, that's where Hamas was elected in a democratic election to rule the fanatic maniacs in Gaza. Seawater intrusion and the leakage of sewage has made 95% of the coastal aquifer unfit for human consumption. Well, that's got to help in Gaza, right? In Yemen, in order to indulge more than ever before in the chewing of quat, I don't know. It's a leaf that people chew because it has an amphetamine effect. And they are now farming quat in huge quantities in Yemen. And the leaf of the quat bush that the Mohammedans chew on over there, well, the bushes absorb far more water than the food plants they have replaced. That's right. The farmers in Yemen are no longer farming normal food that you would eat. They're farming quat because it's much more lucrative. But because of that, drinking water is down to less than one quart per person per day. Drinking water, a quart per day. Let's see. Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, may become the first capital city in the world to actually run out of water. Over in Syria, between 2002 and 2008, nearly all of the 420,000 illegal wells that the people have been forced to dig because they're corrupt, incompetent government, well, all those illegal wells went dry. Total water resources dropped by half, and so did grain output. That's Syria. Iraq, Mosul Dam. Remember Mosul Dam that ISIS took, and then we bombed them and chased them away, and for all we know, they're parked back on top of the Mosul Dam. Well, the Mosul Dam, which is Iraq's largest, shut down entirely during this past year due to insufficient water flow. And the briny water that is invading from the Persian Gulf has destroyed fisheries, livestock, and crops. The Persian Gulf, over in the Persian Gulf, they're trying vast desalinization efforts. And ironically, these desalinization efforts have increased the salinity level of the Gulf seawater. Yeah. Yeah, by about 40%. That, leave it to incompetent pagans to increase the salinity of the water while trying to desalinate. That's about right. Now, Pipes does report that Israel provides the sole exception in this crisis, thanks to a combination of conservation, recycling, innovative agriculture techniques, and high-tech desalinization. Israel can desalinate about 17 liters of water for one U.S. penny. Well, because they invested in the infrastructure quite some time ago. And that's pretty impressive. Anyway, Pipes reports that the looming drought-driven upheaval of populations could cause desperate neighbors to make war with one another, when what they should do is they should think about ending their feudal state of war with Israel, the world's hydraulic superpower, and instead learn from the Jews. Learn from your cousins, the Jews. And, well, learn some stuff, because the Jews have their own problems, obviously, with their socialist government and all that. But at least they can provide the infrastructure for water, for crying out loud. Now, more from the war file. I've got a big announcement over the past 48 hours from the White House. They've released a statement, as a matter of fact, that I'll read. But apparently, elite American commandos carried out an overnight military operation over this weekend, killing Abu Sayyaf, who is a top ISIS chief. And they captured his wife, and they freed a Yazidi woman who is believed to have been held there as a slave. So Abu Sayyaf, in the tradition of Muhammad, not only has a wife, but he also has a slave girl. You remember Muhammad? Have you read the Quran? Have you read in the Holy Quran how Muhammad had the Coptic slave girl? Yes. Anyway, so taking after their Muhammadan namesake, he's got a Coptic slave, as you can well imagine. Now, the White House said in a statement that the wife, Sayyaf, had been moved to a U.S. military detention facility in Iraq, and we even heard from the National Security Council spokeswoman. Why? Because they don't allow spokesmen, only spokeswomen. And she said, quote, "The U.S. government did not coordinate with the Syrian regime, although we attacked in Syria, nor did we advise them in advance of this operation. So there, huh, take that," said the National Security Council spokeswoman. What's her name here? Do I have her name? Doesn't really matter. Anyway, why release a statement? Do we have to gloat every time we kill one of these terrorists? Does Barry have to spike the football and give away our operational attitude to the enemy? Can't we just kill these people and then let them figure out what happened? Nope, Barry's got to have a press release and a press conference and announce how bold and brave he is in taking out the terrorists. Oh, by the way, why did Barry have to spike the football? Because if you've been paying attention, you know that ISIS took most of the Iraqi city of Ramadi this week and actually threatens to move in on the Baghdad airport and perhaps Baghdad itself if somebody doesn't get their act together over there. The response of the mighty warriors of Allah from ISIS, well, they posted on online chat rooms. One of the terrorists said, "If they took Abu Sayyaf, we will take Obama." To which America said, "Please take Obama. We'll send him over. We'll send him over on a plane. You can take him and his whole staff, in fact. Put him in charge of the water facility in Sana'a, Yemen. How about that? Would you? All right. Could you put him in charge of the aquifer monitoring system in Syria? I'm sure he would be good for that. Please take my president, please," we all said. Yes. So Barry has now a direct death threat from the mighty warriors of Allah, and we were hoping they were talking about just actually taking him, please. All right. Now, speaking of the mighty warriors of Allah, from the Shameful Cowardice file, we have the writers and producers, staff and personnel, everyone related to Saturday Night Live has made it into the Shameful Cowardice file this week. Because they played a skit. I actually had a friend of mine send me this skit, and I watched a few seconds of it. I turned it off, and then I finished watching it because I felt obligated because of you people that I know you're waiting to hear what I have to say about critical social events like this Saturday Night Live skit. It was about the fear of Westerners to draw pictures of Mohammed. Yeah. And they called it the Picture Perfect Mohammed skit. Oh, nope, they just called it the Picture Perfect skit because they didn't want to use the name of Mohammed. And the skit was very disturbing in that it was obviously meant to poke fun at the sensitivities of the Muslims, but also to poke fun at the fear that Westerners feel about drawing pictures of Mohammed. The problem is, the people at Saturday Night Live did not draw a picture of Mohammed. And when I watched the skit, which I'm sure many of you did, it was obvious that the joke would only close upon the showing of the picture of Mohammed. That would have been the joke. But instead, the joke seemed to be, or the point seemed to be, well, there wasn't a joke because they didn't draw the picture. The point seemed to be that we at Saturday Night Live, we want to make fun of this, but we're actually afraid to draw the picture. No, the thing is, they're not funny. Well, that's the one thing. We realize we're not funny, and now we're afraid. John Belushi would have drawn the picture. Okay, that's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying we look to John Belushi as some kind of great American, but he would have drawn the picture. Chevy Chase might have even drawn the picture. Yeah. Eddie Murphy? Well, probably not. Anyway, John Belushi would have drawn the picture and let the cards fall where they may. That's all. Let the chips fall where they may. Yeah. But anyway, that's not where we are now. They want to make fun of the fact that everyone's afraid to draw Mohammed, but then they don't draw Mohammed. Neither. And now, of course, they've been accused of plagiarizing the sketch. That's how I read this story. A Canadian independent production company, DHX Media, they claim that Saturday Night Live stole the sketch from them. And apparently they didn't draw the picture either.
They're not funny either.
Yeah. Saturday Night Live found a less funny outlet to steal a not funny and embarrassing and shameful and cowardly skit. So neither the Canadians who wrote the original sketch nor the talentless perverts at Saturday Night Live completed the gag by drawing something funny about Mohammed. And that shows where we are, folks. The fear of Islamic terrorism is real. And the institutions of America, unfortunately, Saturday Night Live is one of the cultural institutions of our nation, as sad as that is to say. But the institutions of our nation are now cowering in fear before the Islamic fanatics and trying to play it off as a joke. But those of us who are paying attention realize that it's just not funny. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. There's a lot of news to get to this week, so not a lot of time for guitar play, boys. Well, at least not on that break. That's kind of depressing. The whole 90s was depressing. You know what I used to say about grunge music? I always said, well, it sounds like music to kill your teacher by. I mean, I didn't get it. Just the whole downer thing with the 90s. Anyway. But there you have it. Let's move from the war file into the justice file, and they tie together. Zhihar Tsarnaev, the Boston Marathon bomber, having been duly convicted, has been sentenced to death by a jury there in Boston. But Vokativ is reporting that Tsarnaev will likely have a long wait until he is executed. And, well, they base that on previous experience. There are, let's see, there's 20 other federal death row inmates. And Tsarnaev will be joining the 20 other at the federal penitentiary there in Terre Haute, Indiana. And the national average length of an appeals process in a death penalty case is about 15 years from the original sentence to the actual execution. Only three people have been executed by the federal government since 1963, and they all spent about 10 years apiece on death row. That was Timothy McVeigh, who you all know as the Oklahoma City bomber, drug kingpin and murderer Juan Garza, and Lewis Jones Jr., who raped and murdered a 19-year-old woman. They were all on death row for about 10 years each. And the 20 inmates who are currently on federal death row have been there an average of about 10 years. And Major Nadal Hassan is one of those. You remember he killed 14 people at Fort Hood in Texas in 2009. 2009, I said. Yep, that's 5 or 6 years ago. So already Hassan has 6 years under his belt, and Zhihar Tsarnaev will be joining him. Folks, it's very clear. The living God is very clear about justice. There is biblical sentencing guidelines. And in fact, let's just go to the source, to the Bible. A warning, warning, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would censor anyone, anywhere, who would dare even consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. We go to the book of Ecclesiastes. In the 8th chapter, God says, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. So Jahar Tsarnaev, I mean, we should just review the videotape and execute the bastard. That's all. Within 2-3 days, give him a Bible, let him meet with the preacher, and introduce him to Jesus Christ personally. And we should do it speedily. Otherwise, other terrorists will not be struck in their heart with fear. Well, I know you say they're suicidal and all that, and so the death penalty probably is not a deterrent, but that's simply not true. Most of the terrorists and their leaders are not suicidal, and they don't want to be killed. And the swift implementation of the death penalty against Jahar Tsarnaev would go a long way toward preventing the next mass murder or mass casualty event that's going to be created by either an Islamist or just some husband and father who detonates over marital infidelity. Or the next biker gang, where they decide to pull out the guns and the bats and the chains. It would strike, the people will hear and fear, and it would restrain them. But Jahar will sit on death row for the next, I would say, at least 8 years, and probably longer, if he doesn't escape. Go back to Qatar, stay in a Sheraton for a few months, and then back to the battlefield. Anyway, very depressing news about the state of justice and the death penalty in America, and just another bad example of bad government. And now we go to the bad religion file, because Barack Obama spoke about Jesus Christ this past week, and that automatically qualifies. I mean, it's automatically downloaded into the bad religion file here at the Worldview. And then we review the story and find out just how bad was it. And it was pretty bad, because Barry this past week basically implied that when Jesus Christ said to his disciples, well, the poor you always have with you, but me you only have for a short time. Well, Barry thinks that Jesus was just too cynical about poverty and the poor, and he basically ripped Christians because, well, I'll let him speak for himself. He says, it's important for us to guard against cynicism and not buy the idea that the poor will always be with us, and there's nothing we could do. We shouldn't buy into that. Now, here's the thing, Barry. Jesus did not say there's nothing we can do. You godless heathen. He didn't say there's nothing we can do. In fact, he said the thing that we could do to help the poor was to worship him. Not that the government should steal from the working people and give their money to the poor. He didn't encourage the government to steal some people's money and give it to others, which is what you advocate, Mr. Ho. He did say the poor would always be with us. And if you say that we should not buy into that idea, and then you call yourself a Christian, well, Mr. Ho, well, even to entertain the idea that Barry Ho might be a Christian is comical. So I won't even address that. But, there you have it. He says Jesus was too cynical, and Barry can do more for the poor than Jesus. I guess because Jesus didn't have massive welfare programs that he could administer. And he didn't go out and do community organizing. And Barry can organize the community to overcome the problem that Jesus said would always be with us, making himself to be, well, at least a demigod. Barry is in his own dark. All right, so let's. I got more from Barry's speech. Let's see who reported that first. That first one was from Breitbart. This next one is from Breitbart. He said, Barry said, he was at Georgetown University, speaking to a bunch of liberals. And he asked about Christians and the social issues that we care about. He said, what do you really go to the mat for? What is the defining issue? He said, the issue of the poor. Well, this is often viewed as a nice-to-have issue relative to other issues like abortion. So that, yeah, he's putting down Christians who think that killing innocent people is an important issue, and that socialism and stealing other people's money to give it to poor people, that's a bad idea. And the fact that we put murder above his ideas about helping the poor, well, it's just because we consider murder a more serious crime than theft. So we're concerned with the killing of innocent people first. Yes, Barry, we're concerned with your stealing of our money second, but we are concerned about both. And we are concerned about the poor, and I would refer you back to my last suggestion, the suggestion from Jesus Christ, in fact, that the solution to poverty is to worship Jesus Christ in spirit and in truth. That's the way to help the poor. That's the way the poor can help themselves, and we can help the poor by introducing them to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Let's see, he argued churches should spend more time pursuing powerful ideas, such as helping those in poverty, in order to attract more followers. Well, Barry, wouldn't it be better if we help people in poverty because we just love our neighbor and we want to help people in poverty? I mean, I've done it a few times in my life, not very much, because I've generally found that throwing money at the poor is usually a pretty bad idea. But I've helped poor people, and it wasn't so that I could attract them to my show or my church or my cult, if I had a cult. I just did that because I love my neighbor. I saw they needed some help, so I helped them. But Barry says we should do it to attract more followers, because that's all he knows. He then goes on to compliment Pope Francis, the first openly communist pope. Barry says he thinks Pope Francis has been transformative. Barry likes that word, transformative. Fundamentally transform America. I wonder if when he gets out of the White House, if he'll become the first transgendered ex-president. Because he's such a transformative figure, what would be a better way to be listed in the annals of history forever as the most transformative if he transformed from Barry to Betty? Instead of Barry Obama, he could be Betty Obama. Betty Hussein Obama. Hey, you never know, folks. Barry says he can't wait to host Pope Francis and spark an even broader conversation about stealing people's money and giving it to people who haven't earned it and do not deserve it, and people whom that money will actually hurt. See, the Pope and Barry, they agree on that. And then the Pope acts like he disagrees on the other issues, like homosexual marriage and abortion. But I don't know. If the Pope is a communist, how can you trust him on any of the other issues? Not that what the Pope says or thinks has much impact on me at all, but it does have a big impact on a lot of people around the country. Just like the things Barry Ho says. Just like the things Eric Holder says. Who's the new attorney general? I don't even know who she is. Just like the things that the prosecutor in Baltimore, who looks like a female human version of a pit bull raised in a cage by Valerie Jarrett and just unleashed upon America after the Boston riots. I forget her name, too. But you people know who I'm talking about. What they have to say has a tremendous influence on people. Breitbart reports again that according to the FBI, the number of police officers killed in the line of duty has nearly doubled between 2013 and 2014. Nearly one murdered police officer every week during 2014, just a little over a year after the mainstream media, alongside the Ho administration, began its coordinated hate campaign to demonize America's law enforcement officers. Yes, we've all been watching it happen. And so police are being killed because, well, what these people say has an influence on the culture. Breitbart reports that CNN has floated the idea that cops are subliminally racist. It's not just CNN, for crying out loud. Do the people at Breitbart watch Fox News? They've been fully on board this false narrative that the biggest problem young black men have is police officers. Just a total lie. But they buy into it and they go along with it, and we've got officers being killed over it. Breitbart reports that by the end of 2013, the Obama administration and its media allies had turned America's police officers into racist assassins The following year, 2014, we had riots in Ferguson, Baltimore, and a near doubling of the number of police officers killed in the line of duty. Breitbart asked the question, is this coincidence or is it just community organizing? I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. Just checking in on the biker story. I see that, I've gotten a message that there's a big difference between these biker gangs like these Cossacks down in Texas and the other bikers who, they rally for the troops and they bring toys for tots. And I'm certain there is a significant difference between bikers. Some bikers are criminals. Some bikers are good guys. I know a dermatologist who's a biker. Got a Harley Davidson, the whole thing. And, he never killed anybody. So yes, I don't want to condemn all bikers, just most of them. That's all. I'm sorry. But I apologize to any of my biker listeners. But if this is what we have devolved to where the best representatives of red-blooded patriotic Americans are people with tattoos all over their bodies, riding their motorcycles around. Well, I'm just sorry. I think we came from a better place. That's all. Yes, by the way, on this show, if you've listened long enough, well, I'm sure I've offended you too, because I pretty much offended just about everyone. And that's why I'm an outlier. I don't take calls, I don't tolerate sponsors, and I really don't care what anybody thinks as far as them being offended by me. That's fine by me. I'm doing just fine, thank you very much. But to my biker friends who are not criminals, I love you. And there's nothing wrong with you being out there riding your bicycle if you could just cover up the tattoos and don't have the vulgarities on the jackets. What's up with the vulgarities on the jackets? Yeah. I got kids, for crying out loud. And you know what? The bikers aren't even the worst of it. It's the bumper stickers I see out there on some of these cars. Yeah, I don't even like to go into town anymore because you're going to see a bumper sticker. And, you know, my kids, they read very well. And it's just very difficult. All right, I just wanted to get that off my chest. You people with your vulgar bumper stickers. It's just disgusting. I think it should be against the law to have profanities and sexual vulgarities on your bumper stickers, or your jackets, or your tattoos for that matter, you people. Get straightened up, for crying out loud. All right. And here's the source of why this kind of garbage is tolerated. We go into the sad religion file. The AP is reporting that the number of Christians is on a decline, and that America is becoming more secular. Now, that didn't take a whole lot of deep reporting to figure that out. But they say that, there's a research from the Pew Research Center there. They have Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, J-Dub, Mormon, they got all. And then they have one group called Nun in their poll. Well, the nuns are now the second largest in total numbers, just behind the evangelicals. So who's hot on our heels? Well, because we're ahead of the evangelicals. The evangelicals are way too liberal for we fundamentalists. I don't know if they have a checkbox for fundamentalists, but that's what I am. I'm a fundamentalist Christian. Well, the evangelicals are being rapidly approached by the nuns. And these aren't the nuns like from the Catholic Church. These are the ones that check, not N-U-N, but N-O-N-E. They got no religion, and they're not afraid to admit it in front of God and everybody. So the nuns are on the increase, according to Pew. They released their study on Tuesday. 7 in 10 Americans identify with Christianity. However, the ranks of Christians has declined as the segment of people with no religion has grown, according to the Pew survey. Listen to this. Between 07 and 2014, the nuns increased from 16 to nearly 23%. Well, that's a lot. So as the evangelical church becomes more and more milquetoast, compromised, pro-choice, pro-homosexual, they don't read their Bibles, they reject Genesis, they reject Noah's flood, they reject the Tower of Babel as myth. As the church goes that way, fewer and fewer people have any reason to go to church. It's like, why go to church? They don't stand for anything. And a few of the weaker-minded amongst our brothers and sisters, they end up migrating over to Islam, and even radical Islam, and end up fighting in Syria and all of that. And it's just depressing to see it happen in what was such a fine country. Let's see. But AP goes on to report that the growth of the nuns has political significance because people with no religion tend to vote Democratic. Well, we knew that. Folks with no religion tend to vote for the most evil, right? Because people with no religion, they don't have no religion. They just have their own religion that they've created. And in their own religion, whether they want to admit it or not, they have to find a way to deal with their own sin. And the way most heathens deal with their own sin is to encourage that behavior amongst other people and to vote for elected leaders who will legalize and justify and normalize their sinful behavior. And so that's why heathens vote Democrat. And, it's not like you needed a PhD to figure all that out. But I just wanted to try to put it in a nutshell for you. All right, now let's move on to the personhood file, because I'm going to give you a fine example of what has happened to conservatism. We see that the nuns are probably going to eclipse the evangelicals in our lifetime. And here in Colorado, we've got a state senator who's a Republican. Her name is Ellen, and she's considering a run for the U.S. Senate, and she is from... Durango, Colorado, up in the mountains. Ellen Roberts, Republican, considering a run for the U.S. Senate. She came out as pro-choice. She says she's pro-choice, and she supports safe and legal abortion, which is kind of ironic, seeing as at least one person is killed in every abortion. It's hard to see how that could be considered safe. I guess safe means we only kill the person we intended to kill, the innocent person. Whereas the guilty parties, the mother, the father, the doctor, the family members who encouraged it, the friends who said, yes, you're not ready to have a child, all the guilty parties, they're allowed to live, and that's what's safe for them. But the innocent person that we intended to kill is killed, and the guilty are let live. That's safe abortion. Anyway, and then she says she's for it. As a Republican, she says she's pro-choice. She's even for IUDs, intrauterine devices that are known, well-known, to prevent the implantation of a human person. They create an inhospitable environment in the uterine lining, and the baby dies because of that. All right, she's for all of that. She says she's pro-choice. But Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains has walked back support for pro-choice Republican Ellen Roberts, yes. They're pointing to her recent support for a measure in Colorado that would have created a fetal homicide law. Democrats opposed that measure and defeated it because they said it was tantamount to so-called personhood, or defining a fetus as a person. And so she voted for the fetal homicide law, and she says she was able to do that because the Republicans wrote in all kinds of exceptions for innocent people who could be killed. The Republicans wrote a fetal homicide law and specifically exempted abortion. And so she said, well, I can vote for that. Well, Planned Parenthood is freaked out about that. They issued a statement, and they said, regarding Ellen Roberts, they said, you cannot support fetal personhood and be pro-choice. You can't do it. That's according to a spokeswoman for Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains. You cannot support fetal personhood and be pro-choice. So the proponents of legal child killing will not compromise. They will not compromise on a single abortion. This lady at Planned Parenthood is correct. You cannot support fetal personhood and be pro-choice. But the Republicans and pro-life voters, they've been told, and in many cases they believe, that they can call themselves pro-life while compromising on all sorts of abortions. So the lady at Planned Parenthood, at least she knows what she stands for. The people who call themselves pro-life, but they support abortion in this case, in that case, and if you sign this document, if you administer anesthesia, if you can't get a heartbeat, well, nobody knows what you people stand for. You'll compromise on a myriad of abortions, but Planned Parenthood, they won't compromise on a single one. And this is one reason why the child killers currently have the victory. It's why they're able to just kill innocent people indiscriminately, a million or more a year. If conservatives would stop buying into the lie that we have to allow the killing of some innocent people and stop writing rules on how to do it, perhaps our side would be perceived as principled instead of just political. Because it comes off as just desperately political and sad. And that's no way to capture the hearts and minds of the people. Idiots. Anyway, Ellen Roberts of Durango, I condemn her candidacy, a preemptive condemnation of her candidacy, and I would beg her to stop advocating the murder of innocent people. In fact, Senator Ellen Roberts, you're going to go down in history alongside the slave traders and the lynch mobs. She calls herself a pro-life. Pro-choice Republican. Disgusting. Disgusting. All right. Now, because our political leaders have devolved to the quality of the likes of Senator Ellen Roberts, pro-choice Republican in Durango, because our government has been taken over by lawyers and heathens, godless heathens, with no religion, well, we've got a moral freefall, a crisis that's happening in the country. I've got a report from The Independent over in the formerly Great Britain. They report that a leading psychologist has warned that young men are facing a crisis of masculinity due to excessive use of video games and pornography. This is Stanford University professor emeritus Philip Zimbardo. He's written a book called Man Disconnected. This might be worth an interview. Let me write this down here. Bear with me, folks. This might be worth an interview over at KGov, over at KLT. Might have to look this fellow up. His study takes a look at 20,000 young men and their relationships with video games and pornography. He says, now, with freely available pornography, which is unique in history, they are combining playing video games, and as a break, they watch pornography. And the key sentence here, the key phrase that I want you to hear, is the free availability of pornography. The professor says this is unique in history. And he's right about this. It has never happened, ever, in recorded human history, that at any time, anyone could download any type of the most vile and realistic pornography that has ever been seen on the planet. That's never happened in history before, and I'm here to tell you folks that it is going to get us all killed. If something is not done about the free flow of pornography in this country, in this world, it is going to get us all killed. The professor claims that this relatively new phenomenon is affecting the minds of young men. Citing the research he and his team conducted for the book, he says, quote, it begins to change brain function. It begins to it begins to change the reward center of the brain and produces a kind of excitement and addiction. He says young men's and boys' brains are literally becoming digitally rewired. It's dangerous, folks. Sexual immorality is the cause of so much violence, bloodshed, and murder in our society and in societies around the world that if a researcher were allowed to look into it and correlate the data, where does sexual immorality relate to homicide, rape, other criminal violence, the data would be stunning. And the conclusion would be irrefutable that sexual immorality is dangerous, and pornography specifically is a threat, is an existential threat to the survival of our nation. And it should be looked upon in a similar way as we look upon the likes of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. That's how, in fact, pornography and sexual immorality is killing far more Americans than ISIS and Al-Qaeda can ever hope to do. Finally here, before we break, the professor, Stanford professor Philip Zimbardo, he also laments the negative images of men in the American media, which show men as being slobs, undesirable, and inadequate. So go back to the Simpsonification of America. Every American man is portrayed as one degree above or below Homer Simpson. And that's the way the American father is now perceived by young people who, many of them, don't have an actual father to judge it against. Now, the professor, he concludes that we need better sex education in the schools. Yeah, that's his suggestion. He says we need to focus not only on biology, but also on emotions, physical contact, romantic relationships, sex ed. He's got a lot of good ideas. Yeah. What he doesn't mention is, could we talk about love and marriage? That's what could solve the pornography problem. That could solve the problems of sexual immorality and sexual dysfunction that affects so many young men. Is let's talk about the fact that God designed sex to be within marriage and within a loving relationship, and in there it's healthy. But of course, this heathen professor from Stanford, he's clueless. But at least he points out the problem. He doesn't have much of a fix to it, but that's why we're here at the Weekly Worldview. We not only point out the problems, but we also are kind enough to bring you the solutions. Time to put those guitars away, but I get your points, and I appreciate you making the points. That's right, not only the problems, but we give you the solutions. For example, we come to reason number 907, to get or keep your children out of the government school system, a report from Breitbart. The University of California, San Diego Police Department says that incidents of misbehavior during the Sun God Festival at UCSD are still being reported as the weekend progresses. Apparently, they have a pagan drinking festival there at UC San Diego. They call it the Sun God Festival. And what are the incidents of misbehavior? Incidents of misbehavior. That's an understatement of enormous proportion. The misbehavior, one case of rape, and one case of sexual battery, a little misbehavior on the part of the kiddos. And the chairman of UCSD's visual arts department asked his class, or he suggested to the class, that they should take their final exam naked. And, well, many of the students took him up on it. Yeah, this was a professor at UCSD. Because he wanted to see the kids naked, I think. But he couched it as some sort of artistic freedom of expression. Some highly developed intellectual activity, like let's take the clothes off all the teenage girls. That's basically what happened.
That was allowed?
That was allowed, yes. It was protested. There were people who were upset about it, but it was allowed, yes. So, UCSD, let's see here. The director of Associated Students Concerts and Events defended the Sun God Festival. She, I don't know if this is a girl, Seraphin Raya. I don't know if that's a boy or a girl or if it's an alien from another planet, but let's assume it's a girl since nobody has spokesman anymore. No. It's got to be a girl, right? She says, at the Sun God Festival, while our detox numbers rose a little bit, the number of students being hospitalized decreased. Our focus is on the high-risk intoxications, and that seemed very effective this year. So I guess they're most concerned if you're drunk enough that you might actually die of alcohol poisoning. That's what they're trying to... if you're just raping some girl in the third row, I mean... Reason number 907... Your child might be asked to take her final exam naked. She may be sexually assaulted. She may be raped. She may be invited to get drunk at the Sun God Festival. So that's like five reasons in one to get or keep your kids out. Here's another one, folks, and this one hits really close to home. Because reason number 909 to keep your kids out of the government schools, chlamydia. Yes, I said it, chlamydia. A tiny Texas town is battling a colossal chlamydia epidemic. Yes. 20 of Crane High School's 300 students have tested positive for chlamydia, which is a sexually transmitted disease. Now, the article here from the New York Daily News, they attack the educators at Crane High School because Crane High School has an abstinence-only policy when it comes to sex education. And so the folks at the New York Daily News, they poke fun at these hicks out in Crane, Texas, because they teach abstinence only, and now they've got a chlamydia outbreak. And they kind of laugh at the folks. And the reporter says, you know, well, the officials there are, they're considering maybe they need to update their sex education because they've got a chlamydia outbreak. Officials met last week at Crane High School to discuss possible updates to the school's conservative sex ed program. The superintendent says, we do have an abstinence curriculum, and that evidently ain't working. Unquote. That's the superintendent at Crane High School talking in a TV interview using the word ain't. Well, he says, quote, we need to do all we can, although it really is the parents' responsibility to educate their kids on sexual education. Unquote. So there's so many problems here. First of all, I grew up about 30 miles south of Crane High School. And we had fewer than 100 students. Well, no, we had probably 150 students. Anyway, this is 30 years ago, and I can just imagine what's going on now. But folks, here's the thing: if you turn your kids over to a bunch of heathens to educate them, it doesn't matter if you teach them specifically how to degrade and defile one another sexually. You don't have to teach them exactly how to do it. Just put them in a godless environment where you never tell them that sex is meant to be between one man and one woman for life in a committed marriage. Just put them in that, and you're going to end up with chlamydia at the least. That'd be the least of your problems is the chlamydia. And the superintendent here says, well, it's really the parents' responsibility. Well, here's the problem, Mr. Superintendent. These hapless, moronic parents have been convinced that you're going to educate their kids. They don't have any responsibility for it. And you're part of the problem. You should resign in shame. Anyway. It ain't working. Whatever we're doing, it ain't working. Well, that's true, Mr. Superintendent. How about bulldozing your school under the ground? Everyone just jump in the hole and tell everyone to take their kids home. Unbelievable. What's that? That's right. They should bulldoze your school and put a pump jack there. lot better. And we moved from Crane, Texas. I could tell you some stories. I played baseball against Crane High School. Baseball in the Pony Leagues. That would have been about 1985. Anyway, I can't remember if we won or lost. But the chances are we lost, because we lost a lot. All right, but let's move from that on to reason number 908, in no particular order, to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Syracuse, New York. Police are investigating the death of a newborn whose body was left by his teenage mother in the nurse's office at the Central New York High School, Syracuse, New York. So it used to be you went to the nurse's office because, well, it wasn't to drop off the baby that you killed. But that's what this one particular student seemed to take away from her life lessons, was that one way to deal with an unwanted pregnancy is to kill the baby and bring it to the nurse's office. The baby's mother is a student, but no one's commenting on who she is, what her motivation might be. The school superintendent says that counseling is going to be made available for students. Counseling. So you know what counseling is? Grief counseling. They do this now after every terrible event. That is a substitute for prayer and religion, which is what people need to hear about after tragic, horrifying events. They don't need to hear psychobabblers telling them how to deal with their problems. They need to hear about prayer, and they need to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they need to hear some lessons from the Bible, like you shall not murder, and you shall not commit adultery. That's what they need to hear after events like this. But instead, they get grief counseling. All right, now, let's move into the culture file, because I have talked a good bit today about the influence people have, high-profile individuals. We've talked about how they have an influence on people. And enter P. Diddy. Are you familiar with P. Diddy? He asked. He's extremely attractive audio engineer. She shook her head no. P. Diddy once was known as Puff Daddy. Sean Puffy Combs. He is a pop artist of the musical variety, and he is not married, and he has announced, according to Breitbart, that he does not believe in the sanctity of marriage, but he is down to sign a love contract. He's down for that. Apparently that means he's in favor of that. P. Diddy, by the way, Puff Daddy, he is a 45-year-old father of 6 children with 3 different women. And when asked why he's been avoiding getting married, he says he just doesn't want the court system involved in his personal life. All right, Mr. Diddy. Yeah. Yeah, don't get arrested. By the way, when you get married, P. Diddy, the court system is only involved for like the first 20 minutes. And then it's like the rest of your life is on you, okay? But what P. Diddy's really afraid of is growing up and acting like a man. When asked about marriage after 45 years of life and 6 children with 3 different mothers, he was asked about marriage. He says, well, I think you have to be ready for it. At which point someone said, well, you got 6 kids. Maybe. No, you're not ready for it. You obviously understand the mechanics involved in certain aspects of marriage, but he says he's not ready. He says, now I think this is very revealing about the psychosis of Puff Daddy. He says, quote, regarding marriage, why he won't do it, he says, quote, there's somebody else's heart involved, and that's a lot of responsibility. And you know what? Puff Daddy is actually right in what he just said there. There's another person's heart involved. That is a lot of responsibility. And Puff Daddy basically just said he cannot handle it.
Yeah, how is he going to get married?
He can't handle the responsibility. He just admitted that he is less than a man. Puff Daddy is not a man in full. He sees the pressures, he sees the difficulties, he sees the hard choices and things that a real man has to do, and he says, I can't do it.
Is it really that hard?
No, it's not that hard. But that's the way he thinks about it. See, it scares him. Puff Daddy is a wuss. He's scared. He doesn't want to grow up and act like a real man. Let's see, he's been dating the same woman since 2007. For whatever that means. I don't know what that means. He has admitted that he's more likely to enter into a financial obligation with a woman than walk down the aisle. He says, I won't commit to no marriage, but I will commit to a contract, a love contract. Oh, baby, there got to be a song in there somewhere. Somebody bring me a sampling machine. I'm going to write me a love song called a love contract. That's Puff Daddy. Actual audio. Puff Puff, yeah, I know. Which accent?
Jesse Jackson.
Does that sounded like my Jesse Jackson? I think that's racist for you to say that.
No, that's.
Oh, what are you saying? They all sound the same? That's just all right. There might have been a little Jesse in there because I don't know. Whatever. Let's see here. Oh, let's go back down to Texas. In the midst of all the biker-related gunfire, there is other news. Texas lawmakers are considering passing a bill designed to undercut the upcoming opinion on same-sex marriage by the U.S. Supreme Court. Yes, a legislative effort to subvert a potential Supreme Court ruling on homosexual marriage. They basically want to pass a law saying, well, we don't care what the Supreme Court says. We ain't going to let no homos get married in Texas. That ain't working. I'm sorry. That's what they want to do. Well, I'll tell you what. They are being warned right now by the homosexualist mafia. The homosexualists from the left-leaning Texas Freedom Network, Kathy Miller in particular, warns the Texas legislature saying their strategy could spread to other states, especially in the South. They risk a major backlash from the business community that would damage the brand of Texas for a long time to come. Yes, so they've been given their warning by the homosexualists. Get in line, get on your knees and bow. Don't mess with us, we'll destroy your economy. It's like 1% of the population is who these deviants are. They're not going to destroy anybody's economy. They couldn't shut down a bakery in Lakewood, Colorado, for crying out loud, if every one of these perverts set up their boycott. Go ahead and boycott, you bunch of perverts. There aren't enough of you to affect our business unless they scare the normal people. And that's what's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We're living in an era of fear, blind fear. We're afraid of homosexuals who can't even hurt us. We're afraid to tell people that sex should be in marriage, between married people, because we're afraid of what people are going to say about it. As Christians, we're afraid to stand up for what's right and true for no good reason. There's no good reason to be afraid. Because the bottom line is most heathens are just like Puff Daddy. They're insecure and they're scared and they're looking for someone to tell them what to do. Tell them how to make their life better. People need leadership. And we serve the ultimate leader, the living God and His Son, Jesus Christ. And we shouldn't stand up. I mean, we should stand up and we shouldn't be afraid. For crying out loud. Let's see, I'm almost out of time. One from the World Gone Gay file. The American College of Physicians has come out in support of homosexual marriage and health insurance to cover the homos when they get sick, and transgender health care, whatever that is. I think that's, anyway, that's the American College of Physicians. So they're being condemned by the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Their executive director, a medical doctor, says, are male organs and hormones normal in most people, but not in a small percentage of others? And do they need to be removed? She asked the question bluntly, giving the lie to this idea that homosexuality is somehow normal, for crying out loud. Does that mean some people need their organs and hormones removed? Well, the medical scientific answer is no, that's ludicrous. Well, then they ain't born that way, I'm sorry. She also condemns them for supporting policies that will lead to deliberately depriving children of at least one half of their family tree. The American College of Pediatricians also condemned the American College of Physicians for supporting the homosexualists. They say it's shameful that the ACP, like the majority of other professional medical organizations, has chosen ideology over science. And science is on our side, folks. And I guess I'll end with that. Yeah, I'll end with that, folks. But don't be afraid. Stand up for what's right. Don't hide your light under a basket. Stand up. Stand up and tune in next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, TheologyOnline.com, American Rights Alive, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, I will return along with my audio engineer next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.